NPR.
Hey everyone, it's Cardiff. This is the Indicator from Planet Money. Hundreds of millions of jobs have been lost throughout the world because of the coronavirus pandemic. About 11 million of those jobs lost right here in the U.S. And one obvious reason for all the economic damage is that governments had to lock down big parts of their economies to slow the spread of the virus when the pandemic started. A lot of these measures are pretty familiar by now. Restaurants and shops and non-essential businesses being closed. A lot of countries going even further and restricting people to staying home all day. But it's been about half a year since the first lockdowns began. So what have we actually learned about whether these lockdowns are the right tools to fight a virus that can spread so aggressively? Greg Ipp is the chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal, and he just finished a long article in which he argues that, yes, there are, in fact, better, less economically destructive, less blunt methods for fighting COVID. Methods that use a better understanding of risk and likely reward than we had when the pandemic started. So today on the show, a chat with Greg Ipp, right after a quick break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Microsoft Teams. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a virtual room, collaborate live on the same page, and see up to 49 people on screen. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. Support also comes from Fundrise. Fundrise makes it easy for anyone to invest in high-quality real estate by building you a portfolio with their more than $1 billion in assets. Get started at fundrise.com/indicator to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived.
Greg Ipp, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me, Cardiff.
Greg, your article reminded me that at the beginning of the COVID response here in the U.S., there was actually a lot of confusion about the specific goals of the lockdown measures that ended up being implemented. And it seems like that is a pretty important part of understanding whether those lockdown measures were the right ones or the wrong ones.
That's exactly right. Broadly speaking, there are two approaches you can take to an epidemic like this. One is suppression. You drive the number of new infections down to zero. That is a very draconian approach, and it requires being locked down very thoroughly for a very long time. That's the approach that China and New Zealand took. The alternate strategy is mitigation, also known as flatten the curve, which means that you don't fully lock down. You just try and hold infections low enough that they don't overwhelm your healthcare system. That's the policy that Sweden pursued. Eventually, enough of your population is exposed that the epidemic stops spreading. We call that herd immunity. In the United States, we didn't really choose either of those things. At the outset, we talked about flatten the curve, and then we locked down, and it sounded like we were going to go for suppression. But then, after just 6 to 8 weeks of lockdown, we started to get tired of that, lifted the lockdown, and then the epidemic took off again. And in some sense, we ended up with the worst of both worlds. We ended up with the economic harm of a lockdown, but the uncontrolled pandemic of, you know, a mitigation herd immunity strategy.
Yeah, and I guess the natural follow-up question then is, well, what's a better alternative? And so you make this point in the article that a lockdown is not this one thing, that there are literally dozens of measures that can constitute a lockdown. So things like closing schools or closing stores or telling people to stay at home. And that what's needed is a way to evaluate each individual measure. Number one, by whether or not that measure is good at reducing infections and reducing the spread of the virus. And then number two, how economically damaging is that measure?
And this indeed is the very model that a couple of Harvard academics that I interviewed have come up with. One of them is an economist, one of them is an epidemiologist. And they've basically said, let's try and come up with a set of measures that really do optimize the most effective reduction in infections at the lowest economic cost. And look, some of these things we are not really going to surprise you very much. We know, for example, that this particular pandemic is very dangerous for the elderly and not dangerous at all for children. What does that tell us? Well, it tells us that we should be putting a lot more effort into protecting nursing homes, which it will save a lot of lives but not be very economically costly. It also suggests that it should be safe in most circumstances to reopen schools, for example, elementary schools. That doesn't mean you open schools during hotspots when the disease is quite dangerous, but it does suggest that opening schools with the correct protective equipment in place and social distancing measures should not be terribly risky, because we know that children are in fact less likely to die from this disease than they are from flu, according to these measures, and the best information we have so far is that they do not tend to spread it to teachers. What else do we know? Well, there's a lot of evidence that a small number of so-called super spreader events accounts for an exceptionally large number of infections. The state of Louisiana, for example, has been tracking exactly what types of venues produce these sorts of super spreader events. Lo and behold, roughly a third of outbreaks in Louisiana are associated with restaurants, bars, and casinos. Similarly, in Japan, the single largest source of outbreaks was bars, restaurants, and karaoke parlors. This tells us that closing those types of venues, it will be economically costly for that specific industry, but it's not going to cripple the overall economy, and it should be very effective at containing the virus. Finally, we seem to have pretty good evidence that widespread use of face masks is really effective at slowing the transmission of the disease. It seems to be the secret ingredient to why so many East Asian countries like South Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, and Japan have done so well. There's now a variety of studies that do suggest that the introduction of masks have helped slow the spread of the disease. And one of the great things about masks is it doesn't stop you from going out and actually interacting in the economy. A very low cost, it's one of those interventions that appears to have very low economic cost with a very large payoff in terms of health.
And Greg, one of the advantages that you write about of trying to evaluate individual measures rather than thinking in terms of a total lockdown versus no lockdown at all is that you end up with these sort of natural experiments, like where different countries or different states can then learn over time which measures work well and which don't as they actually try them out. And in fact, you write that we are getting something like these experiments now in places like California and Arizona specifically.
That's exactly right, Cardiff. And so what you saw in a lot of these southern and southwestern states was that after the initial lockdowns were lifted, they were lifted too sort of like broadly, and we had that second wave of infections. None of these states, interestingly enough, went back to a full lockdown. So in the case of California, they closed the bars and the restaurants. They required stores to operate at like 25% capacity. But they didn't, for example, cancel elective surgeries. They didn't tell people you couldn't go to the beach or go to the park or anything like that. And in the case of Arizona, they took an even milder approach. And in both those states, you have now seen infections and hospitalizations plummet back to the levels they were before the second wave began. In fact, I think in the case of Arizona, they're actually lower. So what does that tell us? It tells us that we seem to have come across a formula that does actually get control of the virus, but does not require a total lockdown of the economy. Now, this is the point when you have to say, watch this space, because these places, they're starting to reopen. So California now has a series of criteria that each county must meet before they can open up. So San Diego County, Orange County, San Francisco County, these are three very large, highly populated jurisdictions. They've now already reached that stage where their restaurants can reopen for in-person dining. Most of their retail establishments can open at lower capacity. That's going to be very good for the economies of those localities. But we do have to kind of keep an eye on to see what happens, whether in fact cases take off again. You know, perhaps a word of caution is necessary here. Even though I think there's a strong, strong case for the target approach that we've been talking about, it's still not suppression. It's still not getting infections down to zero. And until you achieve suppression, you can never really let your guard down, because the infection, the virus is always out there, and you're always going to be at risk of an outbreak, and you have to keep an eye on that.
Greg Ipp, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Cardiff.
Links to the research Greg cited in today's episode will be at npr.org/money. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Brittany Cronin and fact-checked by Sean Saldana. The Indicator is edited by Patty Hirsch and is a production of NPR.
On Facebook, there are these three brothers who love guns, say guns are overregulated, say the NRA is too quick to compromise.
And they're gaining more followers every day.
They're very in-your-face and offensive, and by God, I love them for it.
Listen now to the No Compromise podcast from NPR.